4th of March 2014. I'm Will Kitchen.
I'm Jeffrey Eaker.
Great. I can get my little sheet there.
Got your crib sheet.
Yeah, I'll forget otherwise, you know.
Quite right.
So what were your very first impressions of the school when you came?
Well, I was one of those lucky people who was an original pupil of the Westminster Under School. It was restarted in 1943 in Grants because the main school was evacuated to the country because of the war. They were in Worcestershire, Bromyard, somewhere else as well. They were spread around a bit. So when I came to the main school in September 1945, I was one of the few people in the whole school who knew Little Dean's Yard and the Abbey and everything. So it was quite unusual to be, if you like, a new boy at a school.
Yeah.
And in fact, be one of the few people, there were other contemporaries of mine that came into the school, who knew the ropes of the area. I was a day boy. I lived above Baker Street Station. There's a block of flats there called Chiltern Court. And I used to catch a bus or the underground. I had about five combinations of routes I could take to the school. In those days, it took me about 15 minutes to get from there to school. So the school was very much finding its feet being back in London. As far as games were concerned, we did have Vincent Square, although I'm not sure we did have full use of it. There were barrage balloons in Vincent Square. You know, those were the things that were meant to stop low-flying German aircraft. So they had, and I believe there were anti-aircraft guns in Vincent Square too at the time. So the war was on. It was September 43. I think we just had D-Day. D-Day, I think, was June 43 or June 44. We hadn't had D-Day. We were still fighting in Africa and up through Italy. It was a very serious time. There wasn't the atmosphere there would be today amongst people of those ages. I mean, there was rationing of everything, food, clothing. And it just was a very serious time. That's the only way I can describe it. I was, fortunately, a very good pupil. I actually went through the school. I came in on the fourth form. Is there still a fourth form?
No, it's not a fourth form. There might be
the very lowest school form in the school.
Was it the fifth form? I'm not quite sure.
No, the fifth form was one up from that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was the fourth, the fifth, then Shell, was it?
Yeah, lower enough Shell.
Yes. And then you went to the sixth for 1 year, and then there was the seventh form finally.
Yeah, it slightly changed, because now the sixth form then moved.
I actually came into the... When I was at the underschool, we took an entrance exam. The very first day I came back to school, I'd had scarlet fever, and I had been in quarantine for 4 weeks. I came back to school to be told we were sitting an exam. Needless to say, I did very badly. I was very rusty. But when I came into the school, without wishing to be boastful, we were very serious about form orders in those days. Do you have form order now? Whether you were... Your work put you first.
No,
that's very unacceptable now. We had weekly form order. Every week on a Monday, the form teacher would read out the order of the form based on your work the previous week. So it was a really competitive atmosphere. And I came first in the fourth form. And I was given a double remove. I wasn't moved up in January to the fifth form. I was moved up to Shell. I took my what were called O levels in those school certificate, it was called school before O levels. I took my school certificate after being in the school for 2 years. I was still 14 actually, because I had a fortunate birthday. I was born July the 31st, which put me in a good position in the school year. Made me one of the younger people in the school year. And I came... At the end of term, we were given prizes, if you first, we were given Maundy money. They still give Maundy money as prizes?
No.
Really?
But
I actually have 30.
They give it a little bit for...
I have 13 pieces of Maundy.
Demurrers or... I think
Yes, you get it for... Yeah, you get it for demurrers. You don't get it for...
I have 13 pieces of Maundy money. Penny, tuppence, threepence and fourpence. When I say I have them, I don't have them anymore. They were stolen. I had them framed, and I hadn't got them on the wall. They were in the attic of a house I had in central London. We had builders in who kept their equipment there. And about 6 months after they left, I went up to look at my Maundy money, and the frame was there, and all the coins had gone. But my wife bought me some in the marketplace to remind me of my achievements. We were also given book tokens for being in form order. So we also did physical PT in Little Dean's Yard in the morning interval. Do you do that now?
I don't think so.
Each house did it on its own. So Little Dean's Yard would be full of I was in Ashburnham. The Ashburnham boys doing physical training, as it was called, PT. We did it for about 15 minutes. I remember we had a break from roughly 11 to 11:30. And we were out there doing exercise and getting fresh air. And Ashburnham House was right, again, there was competitions, there was order at the end of term, which squad was considered the best. Ashburnham was right at the bottom of the league, and I took great exception. So when I became more senior, I took control of our PT, and we ended up winning the prize for first. It was all part of this very serious, perhaps I was more serious than many. I must explain to you, I'm a Jew, and as such, the war was much more traumatic in many ways for us, although we didn't know what was happening in the concentration camps till later. Certainly didn't know then. But I think that may have been part of the reason. I didn't go to any services. I was excused services. I don't know if there's any Jews in the school who do that anymore. There were other Jews. I mean, for instance, Nigel Lawson, he went to morning prayers in the Abbey and Latin prayers up school. Do you still have Latin prayers up school?
Yes.
Is it once a week, Thursdays?
Once a week, on Wednesdays now.
Wednesdays. And I was excused all these things, and I was allowed to be away from school at the very serious Jewish holidays, one of which is called Yom Kippur. As you know, there's a war named the Yom Kippur War, which was one day only, and the Jewish New Year, which was 2 days. So I was excused school then. This was because my father was a practicing Orthodox Jew. I might tell you, I've always been an atheist. From the day I can remember thinking, I was an atheist. But I never told my father about it because I considered it disrespectful to him. So I went through all the observations until I got older, obviously.
One of the ways was the school disrupted after the war? So
Well, it was very much disrupted by going to being evacuated. But the only experience I had of that, when the flying bombs came in the summer of 1944, the underschool was evacuated. We joined the main school for about 4 weeks. As you might know, we very quickly eliminated the flying bombs because we overran the sites from which they were launched. When we invaded France, we quite quickly got hold of the sites. In fact, there were V1s and V2s. I don't know if you know much about them. The V1s were rocket planes, which looked like planes. The V2s were rockets that came out of the high atmosphere and just came plunging down and destroyed wherever they landed. And because of that danger, we were evacuated. But what I wouldn't say there was a lot of disruption to the school by the time I came to it in 1945 in September. They came back to London. I can't say that the war had impact on the day-to-day activities of the school. We still had lunch in college, dining room. The school numbers were a fraction of what they are today. I would say there weren't more than 220 boys at the school when I came. So each house was quite compact. There were 40 scholars in college. But I do think it made us, all the pupils had, and teachers, there was a much more serious side to being an Englishman, a young Englishman in London in 1945. I was here till the summer of 1950. There wasn't a roof up school.
Yep.
The grease took place, the bar was there.
You
but
did.
It was open sky.
Oh, you still did.
But we still had the grease on Shrove Tuesday. There was, of course, no building work going on. There wasn't much maintenance. The conditions were pretty basic. But people accepted it then. I mean, as a side, I can mention to you that when I first bought a place in the country, which I in 1968, which I still have, the two properties across the road from me, I don't know, 100 metres to the right and 100 metres to the left, were occupied by old ladies, widows, who had no electricity, no running water. They had a pump outside their kitchen door where they got their water. The lighting was oil lamps, and that was 1968. So, admittedly elderly people who probably had moved there in the 20s, and that was quite common in the countryside. It was only when they died and people bought their houses that electricity was installed into those houses and running water. And that's 68. So you have to, I mean, really, in many ways, we're going back an awful long time, aren't we? I mean, here we are in 2014, and I'm talking about 1945. It's nearly 70 years ago. A lot has changed in those 70 years. I mean, obviously, there were telephones. You picked up the phone, and an operator answered, and you told them the number you wanted. They weren't, in the country, they weren't dialing telephones.
When you were at the school, did any of the masters stick out in your memory?
Yes. I went after I got my school certificate, you specialised, and I went on to the history side. And we had a master called W.F. Monk. I never knew what his first name was. He was a New Zealander who'd been a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford, and he was in charge of the history side. And I think he had a great impact on me for the rest of my life. I was on the history side for 3 years, because I was only just below 15 when I specialised for 3 years. And I adored him. I thought he was a very private person, very quiet person. But as a teacher, I thought he was fantastic and inspiring. I can't say the same about the lower levels. When I was the first 2 years, particularly we had a chemistry teacher called Dr. Birch, who was absolutely atrocious. Absolutely. I learnt nothing. I took physics and chemistry as one subject, and my physics got me through with a credit, or I suppose what would be called a B or an A now. But I knew nothing. Having studied chemistry for 5 terms, he had no control over the class. It was the only class in which I could say it was almost like you read in novels today of an unruly state school, where the master had no control of what was going on. And it was quite exceptional. It was untrue of any other teacher.
amongst the boys, was there a clear hierarchy, and how did the monitors behave to everyone else?
Very well. There was no bullying. There was still corporal punishment, but it was very rarely used. And I'm not sure it was severe. I was a goody two-shoes, so I can't tell you much about punishment. I never had any punishment of any sort. But I would say, again, because of the war, it had changed what I believe public schools were like in the 30s. It was very democratic. Nobody threw their weight around. None, a school monitor or even masters, nobody threw their weight around. But the discipline was good at school. There was an atmosphere that seemed to be self-enforcing. It didn't need draconian measures. There wasn't such a thing as drug taking, which I believe is the scourge of all public schools nowadays. My granddaughter was expelled from Wellington School for drugs. So I'm well aware. Yes, quite well. She had a scholarship. She got the second scholarship when she took it. They still had to chuck her out. The headmaster of Wellington is a man who's very high profile. I'm trying to remember his name.
Anthony Seldon.
He's just about to take a sabbatical. And he was very sympathetic to my granddaughter, but he said, I have to expel her. So, sorry. I don't want to go on.
It's fine. So, I've been told at least, and I can see from here, that you enjoyed rowing. And obviously rowing has quite intense reputation, especially now. What was it like at the time?
Well, compared to other public schools, we were always very lightweight. There was something about Westminster boys. We didn't have the 6 foot, 14 stone schoolboys that Eton had. But in my final year, we did get to the final of the Princess Elizabeth Cup, where we were beaten by Winchester, whose average weight was a stone per person more than us. So, our great rival was St Paul's, and I dare say it still is, in the water, in rowing. I won the Junior Scouts when I was 14, and that got me noticed, and that's how I got in. I was in the second eight the year after that, immediately. And then I was 2 years in the first eight. But I'd been to America. My father had sent his wife and three children to America in 1940. I didn't realise at the time, but obviously, particularly because we were Jews. And as an aside, I might tell you, I have so much sympathy for what my father must have gone through. Can you imagine? He took us to a boat, up to Liverpool by train, and on a boat to New York in June 1940. Dunkirk had taken place. He probably thought he would never see his family again. My brother tells me it was the only time in his life he saw my father crying when we waved goodbye. My father was an immigrant to England in 1911. He landed at Tower Pier, penniless, not speaking the language. And like many immigrants, you see, I have a great understanding of immigrant communities, because if you think about it, an immigrant is almost by definition a person with get up and go. He has got up and gone. And it's true today. You know, most of the complaints about immigrants, they like to pretend it's because we think they're skiving off benefits, but really it's because they work. So employers will choose a Pole before they choose an Englishman to do a job, or a Romanian. I mean, even in the countryside now, when you go to a pub for lunch, you're more likely to be served by a girl who's Polish or Romanian than English, because I have a Polish daily in Kent. I always say to people, I only pay her half the normal wage. I don't, but she works twice as hard as any English domestic I've ever seen, and with a smile on her face, and looking as though she enjoys her work. So immigrants, as you can see, my father was an immigrant in 1911, ended up sending his sons to Westminster in 1945. Mainly because of my mother's influence, who was born in England, I would say. But he was very successful. His first job was in Petticoat Lane, selling fabric off a barrack. He ended up with his own textile business, which I went into when I left Westminster. Oh, as an indication of the atmosphere of public schools and then, I knew I was going into business, but I didn't dare tell anyone. It was unacceptable. If you were in Westminster in those days, you either became an academic, you expected to go to Oxford or Cambridge and become a professor, or in the army, or in the clergy, the Church of England, a professional, I mentioned that, besides an academic professional, you were going to become a lawyer, teacher, the army, church, politics. Business was considered a totally unacceptable career for a public school boy. So much did I feel that atmosphere that I wouldn't tell anyone what I would always say, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do, I haven't decided yet. But I knew I was going to go into a business my father had created. Yeah. My brother, who was 5 years older than me, also went to the school. Only for 2 years, because he was older, out in Worcestershire. And he has a totally different impression of the school than I do. He still felt that the housemaster was a bully. He even said he was an anti-Semite. And I never felt that. The whole time I was at Westminster, I never felt any, as a Jew, any anti-Semitic atmosphere at all. Which again, I suppose, not surprising because of what was happening in the concentration camps had been discovered by the time I was at the main school. One other experience I had here was I saw the first meeting of the committee that set up the United Nations. That took place in Church House in 1944. And in 1945, the very first session of the United Nations took place in Central Hall, right opposite Dean's Yard. But it had been set up in Church House. We very much felt we were at the centre of the world, being at Westminster, because England still was considered an empire in those days. It isn't today, of course, it isn't an empire. But in those days, it's, you know, the empire disappeared post the Second World War. But when I was here in 1945, England was still considered probably amongst the top two powers in the world, America and then England. You know, France and Germany had been destroyed by a bombing. France had suffered tremendously. We were the second power in the world. I don't suppose you feel that today, do you?
You briefly talked about what you did after you left Westminster. Can you just tell
me? I went into my father's business. At the bottom. Sweeping the floors. And spent my whole working life there, 40 years. Ended up selling the business, getting a very handsome price for it in a boom year, and retiring very early in my life. I retired when I was 57, and I'm now 81.
Oh yes, one last thing. Ashburnham House, I believe, moved, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ashburnham House was in Little Dean's Yard. There was a bit that stuck out as you come through the archway. On the right was Ashburnham. And there was a one-story bit that stuck out where the monitors, the head of house and the school, and the monitors had their own facilities.
So what was it like then?
Well, it was a day boy school. So obviously it had a different atmosphere from a boarding school. There wasn't much house spirit, although in sport it came, you know, in the school regatta, there was a school four, a house four or something like that. But I felt more part of the school than part of a house, despite what I said about PT. That was a house activity. But I was, you know, a member of the debating society, this society, I can't remember the names of them. But I very much took part. But, you know, come 6 o'clock, I went home. And I would turn up at 8:45 the next day. I think you need a border. You get a much better feel of what the contrast between today and then if you spoke to someone who was in a boarding house.
I think
that's all the questions you have. How much time have you got? Are you meant to be away from here? When's your next class?
I have a class day because it's station.
Oh, it's station.
Have some lunch.
Yes, that's all.
Do you get lunch today? You're not. Yes. You're late. Can you get?
Well,
lunch
no, I can. I can get lunch now. It's fine.
Good. Anyway, if there's anything else you want, you can. You have my email address. If you wish to contact me by email, don't hesitate to do so. I will reply to you.
Now, well, thank you.
Anyway, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. How do you?
I'll zip it.
Great. Wonderful.
Okay.